So perhaps we should move on to your
To the next question.
next question.
Yes. And this is from Stine, who attended a couple of your workshops here in
Oh, I
Denmark.
remember Stine.
Yeah,
Yeah,
you
I
do.
remember Stine.
She asks what you know about other civilizations out there. Have you come across
Okay.
any? Yeah.
Yeah, other civilizations, as in the folks that we might call aliens,
Yeah, I think
those kind
that's
of
what she means.
civilizations.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yes. As a matter of fact, I have had some experience in that regard. Some of that experience was that took place during Monroe Institute programs that I attended. And in fact, in the latter part of my third book, the English title is Voyages into the Afterlife, there's a discussion of some exploration into an area of consciousness that Monroe called the Gathering. And for those of you who have read Monroe's, I believe, second book, he described that area of consciousness as a place where what he described as intelligences, because I think he was afraid to use the word aliens, intelligence is a sort of gathered there to observe the earth and to observe humankind to see what we do and what we're up to. And in during one of the Monroe Institute programs, there's some exercises done there, and when you in which you explore using hemisync this gathering. It was also known as Focus 34/35. I'm not sure why Monroe couldn't make up his mind between 34 and
I
35,
wondered
but
about that.
I don't know. I don't know if it was he just couldn't quite,
Maybe it's on
figure
the
it out.
edge.
Yeah, maybe it's between the two. It could be, or maybe it spans both of them. I don't know, but in that particular those particular exercises, at first what I encountered were just strange sort of shapes, and one of them that I wrote about in that particular book that I think is just funny looking back at it. I'm sort of wandering around in this area of consciousness, trying to detect something, laying in a little darkened cubicle with my eyes closed, trying to have some sort of visual image of something. And something that looked like a giant puffball came into view. Now, I'm not sure how well puffball translates
Not sure.
into Danish, but a puffball is it's a living thing, and it's a fungus, and it's a ball of fungus that maybe starts out the diameter of a golf ball, and some of these grow up or grow and expand to be as large as a soccer ball or a basketball. And as a kid, when you come across one, what you always do is step on it. Because when you do, it squirts out these green spores and a huge cloud of green smoke. So anyhow, something like a giant puffball came into view, and to my perception, I heard some sounds that were totally unrecognizable. That kind of sounded like had no idea what that meant, and I sort of mentally projected out to this giant puffball that that I was there and I'd like to try to communicate with it. And I again heard some beep, which meant nothing to me. And
You forgot your
then,
alien English dictionary.
I didn't have the alien English dictionary or translator or anything. And as I sort of watched it, it began to sort of jiggle, sort of like a big ball of jello, and a little ball of jello sort of popped out. And when it communicated in English, as far as I could tell, although I now understand how that works a little better. And this little thing said something like, "Well, I'm just a portion of the whole, and I understand you'd like to communicate, and it appeared from our previous attempts to communicate with you that you did not understand us. And I said, well, as a matter of fact, I didn't. That's correct. And so I proceeded to sort of interview this little ball of jello that came out of the puffball. And I must not have phrased my question right, because I asked this person something about, well, where do you come from? And when I did that, I meant, you guys have a civilization on another planet, or where do you live? But, and I expected him just to, point maybe with some little jello finger at where they were. And in the conversation before that, he'd explained that they were sort of like a news crew. And he talked very fast with a high, squeaky voice, and he said something like, we're here kind of like the news crew, and we gather up some information, and we send it back to our home world. Kind of like the news is coming, film 11. He was trying to communicate as best he could using whatever power of English he had or whatever he was speaking. And it was at that point that I said something about, well, where do you come from? Where do you live? Where do you send the film at 11? That's probably something I said, and that was probably my mistake. Because he sort of stopped and looked at me, and he said, oh, okay. And I suddenly felt like I was sort of sitting in some kind of little chair, chase lounge, in some sort of little vehicle thing, and I'm looking straight ahead. And there's this bright yellow beam that goes sort of straight out from where I'm sitting. And it goes, and I can see the stars of outer space. And this beam just sort of goes way out. And I don't know how far. It was light years that it went out. And then it made kind of a quick turn to the left a little bit and continued on. And all of a sudden, this thing I'm sitting in starts moving. And it's moving along the path that this yellow beam is. And there's no way for me to describe the sensation of speed. I know that we kept following this yellow beam, and we passed. It could have been millions of light years that we traveled. I could see a star field in front of me, and I could see that this beam had a turn in it. And when we went through the turn in the beam, the star field suddenly switched to seeing a different one. And it literally could have been millions of light years that we traveled. I have no idea, but we went fast. It probably took less. We went fast. It didn't take seconds until I see that we're there ahead. There's sort of a bright, looks like a star in front of me, off in the distance, and I feel that we're slowing down, and we come to a stop, and I'm looking at a planet. It wasn't a star we were approaching, it was a planet. And it's mostly beige colored, like maybe most of the surface is covered with sand. That's kind of how it looked. And the little guy is sitting next to me, and he said, well, this is it. This is my home world. This is where we live. This is where I send the film at 11. Is that okay? And I said, I was completely and totally dazed. And I sort of mumbled, yeah, that's okay. And he said, okay. And we went backwards along the same route at the same speed. We probably traveled millions of light years, and the whole experience took less than 10 seconds. We came back to where we started, and I am just totally blown away. I can sort of look around, but I'm not really seeing much. I think being in shock is close to the state I was in. And I could tell he was right in front of me kind of looking at me, and he said something like, are you okay? Well, in more exploration of that place, I came across a group that I, in the book, I describe as a second GATH group, which is short for the second group that I met at the gathering.
I can't wait to translate this, by the way.
Yeah, well, second group I met at the gathering, well, it's abbreviations, so I'm not sure how you'll do that. Maybe just write out second group I met at the gathering. But in my further explorations of this area of consciousness that Monroe described, I came across the group that I called the second GATH group. And without taking hours to tell the short story, these, to my perception, were basically a humanoid race of beings. And in my conversations with them, it did sound like they lived on something like a planet. I'm not sure it was in our universe, in our physical universe, or some other physical universe, or some other dimension. I'm really not certain of that. But had some long discussions with a spokesman from that group. And he described their form of consciousness, which was very peculiar to me. And in fact, all of the civilizations that we would describe as non-human and humanoid, as opposed to animals living on the earth, we'll just say aliens, what the heck. All of these alien races that I've encountered have a similarity, and the similarity has been that none of them appear to have what we would call an individual that exists separately from the group of them. They appear to be something you might describe as a group mind, in which all members of that race essentially use or form a single, metaphorically, brain. And so that every thought any of them has is a thought that all of them have. It's not like human beings, where I can sit here and have thoughts that I believe to be completely and totally separate from other human beings, and other human beings do the same. In all of these races that I've encountered, they seem to be using a single mind. I guess a mind is a better word than brain. The other thing that's been common amongst all of them is that I have yet to meet any that experience what we humans would describe as emotion. And in fact, in my discussions with the spokesman from their group, he explained that they too were explorers, and they were here in this area of consciousness to observe the earth and to observe the humans, because there was some big event that was going to be occurring soon, and they wanted to record and study this event. So that if something like this ever happened to their race on their home world, they would at least have some idea of what it was that was happening. And further in the conversation, I said something to him about, as we talked more about this event, I think I might have asked him something like, can you describe what the emotional impact of this event will be for humans? And his reply was indicated by the fact that he couldn't really reply. His reply indicated that the word emotion did not exist anywhere in their vocabulary. It was not a concept that they had any understanding of or experience of. They were maybe a little like engineers, completely emotionless by virtue of the fact that they were completely unable to identify emotion or experience emotion. We had quite a bit of interaction spaced over a number of years. And in fact, the story of that begins in my third book, Voyages into the Afterlife, and continues on into the fourth book, Voyage to Curiosity's Father. That voyage word got into the title of every one of my books, and it was Hampton Roads that did that. I wanted to just have it be Curiosity's Father, but oh well. But in that book, there's more information about the contact and communication with this one I call Second Gath group. And in fact, in Curiosity's Father, the experiences that I write about with Second Gath group indicate that they had changed as a result of the contact that we had and some of the experiences that we shared in my first contact with them. They had actually begun to recognize a form of individuation, a way of having individual traits instead of being all one big, huge group mind. And that they also had begun to experience some emotion. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the one that they demonstrated that they understood, and they demonstrated it really well, was the feeling of love.
Mm.
And in our first meetup, in fact, that the feeling of love was one that that a group of us demonstrated for them in a way that sort of put it into their consciousness in a way that they would directly experience it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I've run into a number of them.
Yeah. How, I was wondering, maybe you could explain how vivid are your experiences? Because when you talk about moving fast and all that, maybe people think that you're in an out of body state, or like Monroe was, or
A lot of people think that that what I'm writing about are out of body experiences, and I must confess that after I read Monroe's first book, Journeys Out of the Body, I spent a number of years trying to learn how to consciously do this out of body thing that Monroe described. And I was never really successful. Maybe five times in my life have I had what I would describe as a classic out-of-body experience. Mm. And at least three of those were ones in which I had been trying and trying and trying over a long period of days to manage to consciously go out of my body. And then sometime in the middle of the night, when I least expected it, I'd suddenly find myself like standing next to my bed, looking at myself in the bed and think, oh, great, I made it out. And then there was this loud sort of crack sound and I was back into my body again.
I know that feeling. Damn.
Yeah. Yeah. At least three of the five times I've had were just like that.
Yeah.
So I would not describe what I'm doing as an out-of-body experience. I would describe what I'm doing something that's maybe better described as more of a mental exercise. And so when people read my books, oftentimes they'll think that when I describe that I'm flying over a forest and observing this or seeing that, people will think that, oh, you must be having an out-of-body experience.
Mm.
But I would describe, I guess, that in those experiences, for me, it's just more of I'm a sort of point of perception with the sensation oftentimes of movement and rarely clear visual imagery. And I say that rarely because one of the things that I teach in terms of how to perceive beyond physical reality, is that we have what you might call non-physical senses, in my opinion. So we have a physical sense of sight, and those of us who have our physical sight tend to see things in three dimensions and full color, and it appears to be a motion, a moving set of images as opposed to still images, and they're pretty clear. And when I first began to explore beyond physical reality, I expected I would see in that same way,
yeah,
using my non-physical sense of sight. It didn't turn out that way. And in fact, I was quite disappointed with the way it did turn out, because it turns out that our non-physical sense of sight is something that operates a sort of along a continuum of visual experience. And on one end of that continuum, the visual experience that I have when I'm exploring or when others are exploring might be described as identical to physical reality. That's on one end of the continuum of visual experience. But that happens very rarely for me. And if we move from that end of the continuum gradually toward the other end of the continuum, then we find that non-physical sense of sight is sometimes very clear, three-dimensional, holographic, but it's black and white. And it may still be moving images. And if we move further toward the other end of that continuum, we might get to a point where it's kind of a fuzzy black and white, kind of like an old black and white TV set with a really bad antenna. So you can sort of make out images in a visual way, still sort of see things, but they're really not very clear, not very focused. They might still be moving, or they might be still images. And as you continue to move toward this other end of the continuum of our non-physical sense of sight and the experience of that, you come to the other end of the continuum, which is where I operate most often. And that's the visual experience of, I guess I would describe it best as what you would perceive visually if you were in a room with no doors and no windows and no lights with your eyes closed. All you really see is blackness.
Yeah.
There's no shape. There's no form. There's not even a fuzzy image of anything. But if something moves toward you, you know what you're looking at, and you can describe it. For those of you who read my second book, the English title is Voyage Beyond Doubt,
yeah,
there's a description of a retrieval of a woman who died in the later stages of Alzheimer's. And as I wrote about the experience, I described it as that I saw an old woman. She was sitting in a wooden chair in a kitchen, and she was sitting next to a wooden kitchen table. The actual experience of that was that I didn't see any of those images, but I knew, in a visual sense, I knew that this elderly woman was sitting on a wooden chair next to a wooden table. I knew how she was dressed. I knew what her face looked like and could describe it. I knew that the look on her face told me that she hadn't had two thoughts you could call consecutive or in sequence in a very long time. Her thinking was completely fragmented. And indeed, when I described what I knew I saw but didn't really see to the person who asked me to check on the grandmother, it was all verified. It turned out that that it was her grandmother, and that she had, it was at that point that I knew that she had died in the latter stages of Alzheimer's, and it turned out that sitting on that wooden kitchen chair next to the kitchen table was the only way that you could calm the woman down enough that she would sit quietly, and then you could feed her and whatever else she had to do. Sometimes the imagery, rarely, is just like the physical world, very intense, very clear, almost has light of its own, all the way through the other end of just seeing blackness, but knowing what you're looking at and describing it. And there are, I would say, there are also non-physical senses of hearing, smell, taste, touch, the same physical senses we have, but again, each of them have a much broader range of experience. So I expected I was going to hear people talking to me just like I am hearing you talking to me when I first began, and was very disappointed to discover that sometimes, rarely it was like that, sometimes it was more like I was hearing a voice in my mind. Sometimes it was like I was talking to myself. It was difficult to know whether or not what I was doing was real or not, because the images and the sounds were not, they were not like the physical world. But I was able to gather information from the people I contacted and communicated that did verify that those experiences were real. Now, the feelings of movement, I guess what I would say about feelings of movement is, when I feel movement, it feels pretty much like it does here. If you were sitting in a car that was driving on an extremely smooth road, so there were no bumps, and asked the driver to accelerate, and had your eyes closed, you would feel that feeling of accelerating. And once you get up to speed and the car is no longer accelerating, then there's no longer a sensation of movement. The early in my explorations, when I intended to go from one place to another, I always had a sensation of speed, the sensation of movement. And I discovered as I continued to explore that I no longer had the sensation of movement, and it became more like, well, I'm going to intend, instead of being where I am here, I'm going to intend to be in a different place. And it became a situation where as soon as I placed my intent to be in a different place, it was like somebody flipped a switch and I just went from one place to the other without moving. Yeah.
That's a feature it would be nice to have in the physical world.
Yes. I just recently took a vacation to Vermont. I spent like 3.5 hours in airplanes and at least that many hours or more sitting on the ground waiting for airplanes. It would have been much nicer just to say, I want to be in Vermont in the cabin of my friend across from Lake Champlain and just sort of close my eyes, open them, and be there.
Yeah,
that'd be nice.
Well, it's probably good to know how you experience things, because I think a lot of people are frustrated with trying these things and they don't think they can make them work because they don't know that that's what they're doing.
Yes, so exactly.
It's good to hear that even someone as experienced as you still sees things.
And I certainly started out being the kind of person who was extremely frustrated. And I went beyond frustrated to angry because I just couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it. I kept trying and trying and couldn't do it until I discovered I've been doing it all along. It just wasn't in the way that I expected. Don't be afraid to use your imagination.
Yeah, that's the clue.
Yep. So is there more for that question?
I have no, but I have one last question.
Okay.
Also from Stina.
Uh-huh.
And that's
say hi.
That's
say hi to her.
I will. And she told me to say hi to you, by the way.